Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, September 29th, 2011. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. But this week, Chris Colby, editor of Brew Your Own magazine, joins us to help launch our next collaborative experiment. Does the shape or material of your fermenter affect the character of your brew? Also, we talk a bit about lagers and lager yeast. If you're new to home brewing or would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm Basic Brewing, all one word. Also, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. And our Facebook show page is on facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon, think of us and click on our associate link first. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you the show, and we appreciate your support. And there is now an Amazon.co.uk link on the site, too. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site, too. And you can find our Basic Brewing iPhone and Android podcast apps on their respective stores. And we are in the BlackBerry podcast directory now, too. We are ubiquitous. There's a new version of our iPhone app out there. I'm not sure if the Android app has been updated, too, but the iPhone or iOS version, I guess, is now built for both the iPhone and the iPad. It's a bit easier now to get all the extras and such. It's especially cool in the iPad because there's much more room for formatting all that stuff. So be sure to update the app if you have already purchased it. And if you haven't, consider it, please. Well, whether you have the app or not, you can see the newest episode of Basic Brewing Video out there in the distribution channels. In this week's show, we celebrate Oktoberfest with a trifecta of beer-related goodness. First, we sample a homebrew Oktoberfest beer, naturally, brewed by our special guest, Barb Willett, who is in native costume, appropriate for the occasion. Then Steve Wilkes bakes up some pretzels using a German Hefeweizen instead of water in the recipe. And that recipe, by the way, came from Adam Drager of the Yak and Yeti, whom you have heard on this show last week. And then to round out the trio of goodness, Andy Sparks makes some mustard to go along with the pretzels. But he makes a mustard with beer, with homebrew. It's a lot of fun to shoot, a lot of fun to talk and sip beer and eat some food outside on a nice fall day. So be sure to check that episode out. If you go to our facebook.com/basicbrewing page, you can see photos of the evolution of the beer that I've currently got in the fermenter. It's a pale ale brewed with the dregs of a bottle of Orval, which I harvested and stepped up using starters. So you can see how the beer looks now in the fermenter and how it looked when it first started fermenting, and how the starters looked and how they progressed over time. If you go down the little timeline, if you scroll down on our Facebook page, this has been an odd beer to brew, and I'm looking forward to tasting how it turns out. While you're scrolling down there, you can see a picture on our Facebook page of a listener, Nick, from British Columbia, with Chief Galen Tyrol of Battlestar Galactica. What makes the other than, you know, being photographed with a man who's served in space, Nick makes the photo special by sporting his Reinheitsgebot is a four-letter word shirt. So that was very, very, very cool. Let's take a look into the mailbag. Here's a note from Paul Charlesworth, whom you've heard on this show. Paul has a background in chemistry. And he heard the listener email a couple of shows back that warned against making or packaging kombucha in plastics because the acid would leach chemicals out of the plastic. Well, Paul says the listener is probably referring to, and I'm going to, there's a lot of things in this email I'm going to mispronounce, but bisphenol A, or BPA, which became a serious health concern about 3 to 5 years ago. BPA was a component in many plastics such as polycarbonates, PVCs, and so on, but its use now has been virtually eliminated. BPA chemically resembles estrogen, the female hormone, and is considered to primarily affect children. This is where the scare came from, because it turns out that many baby plastics, or plastics for babies, I'm assuming, contained BPA. Nowadays, they are mostly BPA-free. In fact, BPA-free has become a marketing tool, just like PABA-free became a marketing tool in sunscreens. We do not typically use PVC or polycarbonate in brewing. We use polyethylene and PET beer bottles and tap a draft, or better bottles and tap a draft, all of which state that they are and have been BPA-free. If listeners stick to the official brewing plastics and do not repurpose something their father pulled from the garage and rinsed off in the stream, they will be fine. And I asked Paul whether the container that I have my kombucha in would be safe, and he responded, with the plastic, just look on the bottom and see what the number is in the triangle. The better bottles, tap a draft, and soda bottles use type 1, which is polyethylene terephthalate, or PET. sorry. Most plastic buckets would be type 2, which is low-density polyethylene. Type 5 would be polypropylene, which is the plastic they use for most of the margarine and similar tubs. So as long as it is white, it is usually food safe. The clear thing with the lid on and spigot that you used in the podcast, that's to ferment and serve my kombucha, was probably designed for liquids and should be okay. Most plastics these days are BPA-free anyway, so I would not worry too much. So there you go. Thanks, Paul. Probably one fewer thing to worry about. It's kind of like the chicken that you see in the stores that says, that they don't use any hormones or steroids. Well, if you look at the disclaimer on the bottom of that label, it says that it's illegal for anybody to use hormones or steroids. So it doesn't mean that it's any better than any other product out there. So that may be what the BPA-free tag has become, hopefully. Let's talk to Chris Colby now, who is done watching wildfires in his neighborhood, at least for now, and can help us launch our next BYO-BBR collaborative experiment. Well, Chris Colby, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Hey, James. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's been a while since you've been on, but you've had a good excuse to be absent.
Yeah, I've been watching out for my imminent death, I guess. If people have seen on the news that the Texas wildfires, my house is about 3 or 4 miles from the front line of the biggest one, the Bastrop County Complex fire. And so there are a few days there where I had my car packed up, ready to go, and I just sort of spent the day watching the news and wondering if I was going to have to, get out of Dodge and come back to a, burnt-out shell of a house. Mm. But luckily for me, unlike the majority of the people in this county, my house is still standing and not it's weird. My wife was talking to some people who their houses didn't get burnt, but they were within the fire zone. And when they came home, the contents of their house were melted. Like the floors were buckled and bubbling, and the countertops were warped and, stuff like that. So it was, even for people whose houses didn't burn down, a lot of them are probably, not in a livable shape. The wiring was melted in a lot of places, which of course raised the possibility of further fires when they, reconnect the electricity.
Yeah, sure.
So yeah, I've been, not personally busy, but waiting to be busy on account of a very large fire.
And did you put the cats in the car as well?
I had cleaned out the back of the Subaru Outback, and I have these big cat carriers, and I had those sitting in the living room waiting to, if the – if the call came, just get a big shovel, shovel the cats in the carriers, and hit the road.
Wow. Well, we're glad you're okay. I saw plenty of footage in the news and on Facebook and such as that, and it's just incredible how fast those things spread. I mean, you guys are living in a tinderbox down there because of the lack of rain and the heat and all that. And even though the trees may look green in some places, they're still just as dangerously dry as if they were brown. So,
yeah. And part of the problem with the Texas County Complex fire started in a pine forest, and pine trees are very resiny and create sort of extra problems. And then this fire, my brother-in-law's a firefighter, was so intense that it turned into what's called a horizontal rolling vortex fire, which is essentially a tornado of fire that rolls horizontally across the ground.
Wow.
And so it's very weird. It creates unusual patterns. Like it leaves bands of trees that are untouched, and because it moves so fast, essentially, that it burns all the ground clutter away. But the fire is moved past the tree before the tree even catches on fire. So there's these weird sort of stripes in the Bastrop Forest now of, you know, completely burned out trees that are, you know, black and ash covered, and ones that are sort of much less burnt, and some of them might even survive. So, it was a very intense fire.
Well, it's fascinating from a scientific standpoint, and tragic from a human standpoint of personal property lost and lives lost. And so anyway, we're glad you're okay and hope you continue to be so.
As a practical upshoot, I can't brew outside now. There's a complete ban on any sort of open flame outside.
Wow. So even propane.
Yeah, even propane.
Huh.
Although mysteriously, you can still smoke cigarettes wherever you want, and apparently you can throw them out the window of your car too, yeah. which I see at a frequency that's unbelievable given current events.
Well, let's leave that there then. It's one of my pet peeves. One of my big pet peeves is going behind a car at night, especially, and you see the orange flame bouncing on the highway, in the car from the car in front of you. But let's leave that there. It's time to do another experiment.
Yes, it is.
We were talking yesterday, and we were thinking about things to do, and someone, and I apologize for, I don't have the name here with me, but a listener wrote in saying that he heard us talking about your Belgium trip, and one of the breweries there was experimenting with cylindro-conical fermenters as opposed to the traditional kind of square fermenter shape, and they don't, I guess they don't have results on whether that changes the flavor of the beer or not on that scale. But the question was asked, well, why couldn't we do that as an experiment on the homebrew scale? I mean, we've talked about whether fermenter shape affects the character of the beer, fermenter shape or size or composition, whether it's metal or glass or plastic or whatever. So this is an opportunity where we could actually test that out.
Yeah, the brewery in question there was Westmalle. They traditionally have a square sort of fermentation rooms or whatever, but they some stainless steel manufacturer was hoping to get them interested in buying stainless steel vessels and gave them a cylindrical conical, if I remember the story right. And anyway, when we were there, the cylindrical conical fermenter showed up there, they were testing that out to see if they can brew their double and their triple in it and have it be, of the same consistency. And at a homebrew scale, this should be an interesting experiment for a couple reasons. It'll be also be uninteresting for one reason. One thing you might have heard is that on a commercial scale, they claim that, you know, broad shallow fermenters have a different fermentation profile from, you know, taller, thinner ones. And some people have tried to extend that to the homebrew range or the homebrew scale. But that's probably not going to have too much of a difference, just because the problem of having a high tall fermenter at a commercial scale is that the pressure at the bottom of the vessel is just enormous because of the size of it. Whereas at a homebrew scale, if you have short and fat versus tall and thin, the pressure at the bottom is going to be negligible. But just the plain old shape and just the different configuration or whatever should make for an interesting experiment. You know, we were thinking just, you know, make 10 gallons of beer. Yeah, you know, another good thing for a lot of homebrewers. If you're running low, make 10 gallons of beer, split it between a bucket and a carboy, and, you know, test the see if there's any difference. Or if you've got I've got a stainless steel cylindrical conical, you know, homebrew sized one, make 15 gallons of beer and split it between, you know, the same exact wort in three different fermenters, pitch them with the same yeast, and this should be conceptually a very simple experiment, although we will need to talk about how to get the wort exactly the same in all three.
Mm-hmm.
So that you don't get the dregs of the tube at the bottom of your kettle in one and not in the others. But conceptually a simple experiment, and one that I think very doable, and one that I think the answers are going to be interesting to people. You know, particularly if you brew all the time in buckets, is it worthwhile to switch to glass carboys, or, you know, is there any flavor benefit to fermenting in stainless steel? You know, these are something that the experiment should be able to address quite nicely.
Yeah, and if you've invested hundreds of dollars in a home sized cylinder conical fermenter, I hope that you'll go ahead and do this rather than saying, it works just fine. It works a lot better than the I can see where you might have a vested interest in not proving that there's no difference between your fancy new expensive fermenter and, you know, the bucket.
A nice thing, though, I've got a cylindrical conical, and I don't necessarily think that the beer tastes any better, but handling the fermentation is a lot easier. When I'm ready to dump the yeast, it's just, you know, you just open a valve and shut it rather than having to rack the beer off too. So it's a convenience thing as well as it's a convenience thing rather than a, you know, quality thing. But I mean, I do think it's interesting if there's any, it's still possible that fermenting either in the different material and or just the different shape is going to produce some sort of flavor difference from, you know, for some weird unknown reason.
Yeah. And now if you are doing the cylinder conical versus a bucket or glass carboy or better bottle or whatever, you shouldn't dump the yeast, right?
I mean, you'd want to treat all three fermentations the same.
Yeah, we don't want to introduce another variable in the equation, but it's just, we want to be able to compare apples to apples here. You shouldn't put one in the refrigerator and one in the basement, and, you know, you should keep the fermenters in the same place so that they have the same temperature going on. You know, all the variables that you can, try to limit them as much as possible. Now, yep. We talked about the tube. I mean, the second dry yeast experiment batch that I did, in order to limit the difference between the batches, because what I did was I did a 5-gallon batch and I split it between two carboys, and I racked off one from the kettle, and then I racked off the other secondarily and wound up with a lot more trube in the second one than the first one. And so that was one variable that I hadn't counted on. So what I did with that size batch, excuse me, is I is I racked the whole kettle into one of the carboys and then swirled it to get whatever trube was in there up into solution and up floating around. And then I racked that, half of that, from that carboy into the second carboy so that we would have the same amount of trub in each. So if you're doing like a 10 or 15 gallon batch, I mean, what are your ideas on how to account for that in that size of a batch? You don't have a 15 gallon carboy that you can rack into.
No, there's a couple things you can do though. One would just be have the three carboy or the three fermenters sitting there and just redirect the tube to the fermenters at different times. Like put 2 gallons into the glass carboy, then put 2 gallons into the bucket, then put 2 gallons into the cylinder conical, then repeat, you know, two back into the carboy, two into the bucket. And so you just, you're getting early, middle, and late, you know, wort into all three of those. And that should be pretty close. Mm-hmm. Another way to do it is, like most people, if you have a three-tier system or a three-vessel system, most people have a balanced one in that the size of the vessels are all the same. You could pump the wort out from your kettle into your hot liquor tank, then let it settle, then drain that out into your carboys. Because what should happen is, you know, you'll get a little bit of trub at the end, but that should settle out, and you should be able to just pour clear wort out into the three fermenters. There's probably a number of different ways that this could work, but as long as you end up not having one, you know, the last fermenter you fill just be this big cloudy truby mess, and the other, you know, fermenters have nice clear wort in them.
So what are we looking for? We're looking for performance of the fermentation to begin with, right? If there's a difference, if you can see through, like if you do a better bottle versus a glass carboy, you can actually see the fermentation and you can, you know, note visible differences. But otherwise, you could, look at the airlock and see if there's any difference in the activity there.
Yeah, all the usual stuff. Or I don't know if we call it usual stuff, but the same sort of things we looked at in the, you know, the dried yeast experiment would work here. You could take a look at how long it takes to start fermentation, how long fermentation goes. You would expect that those would be the same, you know, in the same volume of beer, same at least rough shape, you know, just different materials. But you know, that's why you do experiments, is to figure out if that really is true. And you know, the big difference, of course, is going to be smelling and tasting the beer and seeing if you can detect any differences. But yeah, you can record the time until the fermentation starts, how long it takes to finish, what the final gravities are. You know, maybe there's some weird correlation between what you fermented in and final gravity. I mean, doubtful, but yeah. But that's why you test things experimentally. You know, sometimes you just want to rule stuff out. You know, that sounds reasonable, but you know, if you've never done an experiment to prove it, you know, you can't really say that that's the case. Just because something sounds logical. So yeah. I think, I don't know, I'm excited for this experiment, mostly because I'm low on beer, and this will give me an excuse to brew a 15-gallon batch of some pale ale or something that I like and ferment it all out, and then I'll have three cornies full of beer, and I'll be a scientist.
and you could take the ingredients off your taxes or charge them to the magazine.
I maybe could.
And we said November 15th for the deadline. That'll sure. give us a month and a half to get this done, and we'll get it out of the way before the Thanksgiving holiday. And
one thing we might want to say, in the interest of making the experiment as simple as possible, to make it easy, if people brewed with a very flocculent yeast strain, it would help because the fermentation would progress, then the yeast would fall out, and you could rack straight from the primary fermenter into your keg or into your bottles, you know, or into your bottling bucket. And that, because saving a step with a, you know, going racking the beer to a secondary fermenter is going to be an extra step in there that's going to add some, you know, some variables we don't want. So use, you know, use a highly flocculent yeast strain. Like, I'm probably going to go with White Yeast 1968, the ESB strain, or it's the White Labs equivalent is WLP002, the, I think they call it English ale strain, you know, just make a nice English pale ale or something. And I mean, that's not the only flocculent yeast strain. That's just the one that popped into my head, given that I've used it a bunch, but something like that versus like a 1056 or whatever, that's more powdery, that, you know, sometimes people like to do secondaries on, using something flocculent is going to help this experiment go a little easier.
Good point.
On the participants.
Good point. Yeah. So November 15th, try to get your data in and collected by that time. And I should have the form out there well before then. But yeah, should be a good one. Now, it's starting to get, you know, eventually it's going to get cool. it's starting to get cool up here. And that puts us in mind of brewing lagers, because it's easier to do those in the wintertime up here in the Northern Hemisphere.
It was down to 95 degrees the other day here.
Well, see, there you go. You could practically just do those outside then.
Yeah.
it sounds cooler if you go with Celsius. So, you know, that's what, about 35 Celsius?
Yeah.
So,
you right
know,
in there.
If only that were Fahrenheit, you'd be good to go. But there's been some people have been kind enough to send me links to articles for the past few weeks about this new study or scientific discovery that they apparently have traced the roots of the lager yeast strains. What you've read the actual article. The straight from the source there. What's that all about?
Yeah, the article was published in PNAS, Proceedings of the National Academy of Science. And basically what their result was that it's been known for a while that, you know, most beer is either brewed with Saccharomyces cerevisiae, which is with ale yeast, or Saccharomyces pastorianus, which is also sometimes called Carlsbergensis, or lager yeast. And they've known for a long time that lager yeast is a cross between ale yeast, Saccharomyces cerevisiae, and some other Saccharomyces species that was, in the lingo, it's cryotolerant, but all it means is it can stand low temperatures. Well, so anyway, these researchers, they actually found in the wild the cold tolerant yeast that merged with ale yeast to become lager yeast.
And that was in, they found that in, I'm trying to remember, like in a tree in South America or something like that?
Yeah, it was in Patagonia, which to the best of my knowledge is a clothing store. So I don't I don't get how they had trees growing in a clothing store, but whatever. No, Patagonia is a region in South America between between Argentina and Chile, or
some banana,
spanning those two. Yeah,
some banana republic.
They found this strain, which they called Saccharomyces eubayanus, because it has some similarities to Saccharomyces bayanus, which is a fermenting strain that's used in some wine production, not all of it, but and interesting, the reason that it's like S. bayanus is that they think S. bayanus is actually a cross between lager yeast and this other strain that they found, which is called S. uvarum. So yeah, interesting results. So lager yeast, which, you know, rose to prominence in, what was it, 15th century German brewing, actually came from the, you know, fruit trees in Patagonia.
So how did it get there? How did it get from all the way from South America up to Germany?
Well, that they don't address in the paper. I would assume, since the, you know, the yeast would have to get there, it would then have to get into a brewery and contaminate a brewery fermentation, and then it would have to, combine with ale yeast to make lager yeast. I think the best guess would be that it some sort of agricultural import, or maybe even, they stored something, that they stored the fruit maybe in barrels, and then later those barrels were used in a brewery fermentation or something. That's not addressed exactly in the paper. The paper just identifies the genetics and confirms that this is the yeast that, merged with ale yeast to become lager yeast.
Now, yeast reproduction is asexual, right? They just bud. They make daughter cells, and those make daughter cells, and it's just it's not, if we go back to science class, you're not taking a male one and a female one and combining the genes or the genetic material and creating the next generation. How does that work?
Yeast can reproduce by budding. I'd have to look up if there's also a sexual lifestyle. With a lot of microorganisms, there's sometimes both. And there's sometimes, certainly in a brewing environment, the conditions are set so that, and it's just known from people looking at brewery fermentations that yeast reproduce by budding there. But that's something that I probably knew at one point. If there's a lot of microorganisms will enter a sexual phase of reproduction when they're extremely stressed, and obviously brewery fermentations are set up to make them not stressed. So I'd have to look that up if Saccharomyces cerevisiae also has a sexual mode of reproduction, but it does. In the brewery setting, it's reproducing asexually by budding.
Well, it's interesting nonetheless, and it's also interesting to see, reading different articles. It's funny for me, having once been a general assignment reporter, where I was asked, day after day to do stories on things that I either knew nothing about or knew very little about, and then start the day knowing completely nothing about a topic, and then by the end of the day, having written a story to try to look like it, that I knew what I was doing at that time. And it's always funny to read stories from general assignment reporters when you know what they're supposed to be talking about. And one of the quotes was something like, scientists are saying that this opens up breweries to use different yeast strains to produce specialty beers. And I was like, what?
Let's just go ahead and say no, that's not at all what this signifies.
We're already doing different yeast strains to do different styles of beers, but
Yeah.
So anyway, that's – yeah.
And here, via the wonder of to Googles, I found out that, in fact, yeast under conditions of stress can undergo sporulation, in which they go through meiosis, they produce spores, and then they proceed to mate. So, yes, under normal conditions, they're diploid and they just go through simple growth and budding, but they can reproduce sexually when they're stressed.
Sporulation.
Sporulation.
It's the new MTV show. speaking of lagers, you have an article or a series or set of articles on in the most recent BYO on MyBox, which are lagers. You've got Jamil Zainashev doing an article on how to brew them, and you've got an article with Sean Paxton on what to cook with them once you've brewed them. And a bock is a nice malty style of beer. It's kind of a family of beers, right? The bock.
Yeah, bock is a whole family of different beers. There's what's normally called just plain bock. And, my bock is similar to that. It's usually a little lighter in color. And then, of course, we also know about Doppelbock, the big, thick, you know, higher gravity box. And so, yeah, it's a family of beers. And we have, yeah, our style profile column, which Jamil writes every issue, is on my Bock. And then Sean Paxton, the guy who calls himself the homebrew chef, has come up with some food recipes using my Bock for cooking. And then we also, in the same issue, it's kind of a lager-heavy issue. We have a story that we just called, like, Retro Clones. It was, we cloned some beers from, you know, sort of large regional breweries of the past, in sort of the bad old days of American brewing, when everything was kind of the same. But, you know, we cloned Olympia, Hams, Dixie, Rolling Rock, and another beer called Chalk, which is actually not an American Pilsner, but was a beer that gained some regional prominence in Oklahoma at the time.
Yeah, we went over and visited. We were invited to visit Chalk Brewery. It was a couple of years ago, I guess. There's an audio podcast and a video podcast, and that was started out. That beer was actually, according to the brewer, Michael Ollie. Or as Tom Brokaw would say, Michael Ollie.
Michael Ollie.
that beer was brewed in the basement of the restaurant there. And it was, I can't remember, he took like, there was in the original recipe, there was a ton of sugar. And there were it was like just grain in a pillowcase somehow. And it was just kind of, you know, I don't know how your recipe goes. But that was, you know, it was kind of a... you know, strung together low-tech kind of recipe to begin with.
But yeah, it started out very much as a homebrew thing, which is one of the reasons we tried to clone it. And then it, you know, as it got bigger, it became more like sort of brewing a beer, and it turned into sort of a cloudy wheat beer kind of thing. And that's, we use our clone recipe of this is sort of the you know, quote unquote modern version of it, not the you know, the original homebrew version would have been fairly interesting, but we cloned the one that actually was people were familiar with.
Super nice guys over there. Steve and I went over there, and the brewery is adjoining an Italian restaurant, and the Pete's place.
Yeah, I think that's what it's called.
Yeah, and they fed us lunch. It's like us and the brewing crew sat around this big table, and they just kept bringing out more food, big plates of spaghetti and lasagna, and holy smokes, so good. And they're also doing a bunch of specialty beers now, like. You know, in bombers, like Belgian beers, they've got some doubles, and there's like a Saison, and I think it seems like they were going to do a Berliner Weiss too. I'm not sure.
Wow.
So they've come a long way from the basement and the pillowcase.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, you mentioned Rolling Rock. Isn't that a an Anheuser-Busch product now?
Yeah. They merged with AB. It's about a decade ago.
Has it been that long?
Holy, it's been quite a while.
Holy smokes.
Because it used to be brewed in the glass line vats of La Trobe. But I think, if I remember right, soon after it was acquired, they quit brewing it there.
Yeah, and it seems like to me Anheuser-Busch had to modify their brewing techniques to get the same kind of, you know, quote-unquote defects in the old style Rolling Rock as they, you know, as they were trying to brew it in the new place.
Yeah, Rolling Rock bought for years and years. I don't remember, know if this detail made it into our article, but I got it from someone who knows. They bought extremely low kilned malt, like a very, very light in color, and so it produced just tons of you know, the precursor to DMS, and then you know, it just didn't all get boiled off in the boil. So, yeah, Rolling Rock is famous or infamous, depending on who you talk to, for that sort of cooked corn DMS flavor.
Yum.
some people like it.
Yeah, back when I in the old days, I went up to Boston over the 4th of July week, and back in 89. And back then I was drinking Budweiser, and so I went to a party that my friend was throwing, and mine was the only six-pack of Budweiser in the fridge, and all the rest of the beer was Rolling Rock up there in Boston. So,
wow.
Do you know what the 33 is?
Yeah, I think – well, I've read a couple stories about it. The one that seems sort of, I don't know, most believable was the when the founder or the guy who you know, was running the company wrote out what he wanted on the bottles. He wrote out the little blurb, and then he wrote 33 after it, which was the number of words in it. And when they put it on the bottle, they retained the 33, thinking that he wanted that on the bottle, when really it was just the word count. And that's I don't know. That's one of the stories. That one, I don't know. Sounds fairly reasonable to me, but who knows?
That's what happens when you work in a company where somebody's gotten their rear end chewed once too often for questioning the boss.
Yeah, just do what he wants. I don't care if 33 doesn't make any sense.
Are you going to ask him? No, yeah. I'm not going to ask him.
Yeah, there are like, I don't know, hundreds, maybe not hundreds, but there are at least several theories as to where what the 33 means and what its origin was.
Well, that's neither here nor there. It's a little bit of a bunny trail there, but it's a fun to talk about. Fun, I'm sure it's a fun article as well. It'd be interesting to see if you can duplicate those beers as well. Well, great. We hope that maybe you'll get some rain here shortly to help alleviate your fears of more burning, and maybe you can get outside and brew.
Yeah, some rain would be very helpful at this point.
Well, all right, Chris, be careful. Watch the weather report, watch the wind, and stay out of trouble.
Keep on watching the skies.
Well, thanks again to Chris. Glad he's out of danger, he and his cats. And I hope he stays that way. Put our new experiment on your calendar, everybody. Does the shape or composition of your fermenter affect the character of your beer? Take part and help us find out. And remember, if you want to get a free issue of Brew Your Own magazine, just click on the banner ad on our website, basicbrewing.com. And you'll get a free issue. And if you subscribe to, or if you decide to subscribe after you get that free issue, you'll be helping to support this show. We appreciate everybody who has done so. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com, or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our website. We've got combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time, and you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in our store, too. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com, and if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are ViewQuest, Retro, DAB, Radio, and iPhone Dock Black. And how to make a coopered wooden bucket. Cool. Thanks again. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo or the Amazon.co.uk logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping, and we appreciate your support. Don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association or subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine through the associate link on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next week. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer, production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.